There's always hope. And now it's time for one of my favorite stories. And I apologize if I've already told some of you this before. It's a scene right out of Main Street, Canada, where there was a group of friends who liked to meet regularly to share coffee and swap stories at a local donut shop. It could have been Tim Hortons or it could have been the Squires, I understand. Usually they would talk about politics and sports, but on this particular occasion, the conversation drifted to the rather grim subject of death. One of the friends looked up from his double-double and he asked the others, "What would you like people to say about you at your funeral?" And after some careful contemplation, one of the friends answered, "I would want people to say he was a great husband and father, an example for many to follow." Another friend would reply, "I would want people to say that I was a great humanitarian, that I gave generously and I cared for my community." The third man said that he hoped that people would admire his faith and his commitment to the church. And so the conversation went, with each suggesting warm platitudes about themselves, and they hoped that someone would share such things at their funerals. And finally, one of the friends who had been quiet during this entire exchange, who was obviously deep in thought, answered this way, "Personally, I would hope at my funeral someone would say, 'Look, he's still moving.'" Death. It is really something, frankly, that we would rather not talk about. As a pastor, I have encountered over the years all kinds of reactions and behaviors associated with death. Some people try to lessen the blow of a death. We use euphemisms like, "he's passed away," or "he's gone to glory." I had a dear friend who used to say, "he's graduated." "He's called home," we sometimes say. We use these phrases all in the hopes of easing our discomfort. For some, the discomfort in thinking about their own inevitable death leads to some very careless behavior. I'm thinking primarily of the reckless avoidance of preparing a will or power of attorney documents. Others avoid buying life insurance because they think they are declaring to people they're betting on their life. We also have come up with bad theology to try and comfort us in moments of death. Ideas with no biblical support, like when a young child dies, terrible tragedy, we like to say to everybody that that little one became an angel. Actually, in the wonderful musical, Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat, you know that one? Oh yes, Donny Osmond, I know. There was one song, or there is one song in that musical that responds to the news that Jacob has just heard about Joseph's death. And the line is this: "There is one more angel in heaven, one more star in the sky. Entertaining, yes. Comforting, maybe. Truthful, no." It's not. No one, not one of us, likes to confront death, except maybe an undertaker, I don't know. Sensing this avoidance of death, Immanuel Kant, the great German philosopher, wrote extensively about what he called the existential anxiety. Existential anxiety is what Kant labeled that feeling, that anxiousness we feel every time we encounter an experience of death. It is the anxiety we feel when we go to a funeral home or a memorial service or when we go to see a terminally ill friend or loved one. Seeing death played out in someone else's life forces us, Kant says, to confront our own mortality. Death rips a hole in the heart of the survivors, a hole that never really heals. A professor of mine, Dr. Ken Jackson, Bruce might remember him, was asked a question one day when we were on a course called Death and Dying. He was asked, "Dr. Jackson, the pain we feel after someone dies, does it ever go away?" His answer has stayed with me all these years. For in reply, he said, no, the pain never goes away. It just lessens in severity. Therefore, it is with some trepidation that you and I today, we journey to Bethany. Bethany of Judea, to the home of some of Jesus' dearest and closest friends, where death has wrought its destruction. Into this home where Jesus has often come to get away from the pressures of life and ministry. A place where he kind of could let his hair down, if you like. A place where death had brought pain, loss, and separation. Knowing the deep bond between Jesus and Lazarus, word was sent to Jesus of Lazarus being quite ill. Actually, he was dying. I suspect strongly that this message was sent to him with urgency in the hope that Jesus would come quickly and heal Lazarus. But oddly enough, I don't know if you caught this, we read that Jesus lingered for a couple more days before he actually left to go to Bethany. Now, it's odd to me that he did that, because when someone in my family or someone that I'm caring for in the church is in this situation, I go as soon as possible to be with the family. Jesus waits 2 days. In what is clearly an intentional delay, Lazarus dies. And according to Jewish custom, he was buried the same day he died. That was a necessary precaution given the warm climate and the possibility of disease. According to custom, Lazarus' body would have been wrapped tightly with cloths, which were sprinkled then with spices and perfumes. According to custom, the family and friends would be in mourning for 30 days. And during this entire time, friends and family would come to comfort the living and mourn the dead. Often they would demonstrate their grief visually by dressing in sackcloth and sprinkling ashes and dirt over themselves. They would act out their grief in dramatic fashion by weeping and tearing at their hair. The result of this death on the family would be demonstrated by family and friends who would literally, I kid you not, go into their home and ransack it. They would turn over the furniture, they would smash the pottery, all with the purpose of portraying that a thief had come into the home, had broken in, and stolen their loved one. Death in Judaism is a robber, a thief. He has taken a precious loved one without any warning. Into this traumatic scene, Jesus enters. To say it was a grim experience to come to Bethany on that particular occasion would be an understatement. To the best of our knowledge, Lazarus was probably a younger man, maybe about Jesus' age. We are not really told whether he was ever married or not, but he still lived with his two sisters. He was a man cut down in the very prime of his life. Martha learns that Jesus is approaching Bethany. She runs out from the house to meet him. And what were the very first words out of the mouth of Martha? Martha's words were uttered out of pain and deep anguish. Lord, if only you'd been here, our brother would not have died. How many times have we, or those we know who are grieving, echoed similar questions? If only. If only the doctors had discovered the cancer sooner. If only he hadn't decided to drive on those slippery roads. If only I had been more attentive to what my child was doing. And sadly, we all know if onlys don't change a thing. Death always seems to have the last word. And dwelling on the if-onlys serves only to deepen our guilt and our pain. Jesus walks into this terrible scene of grief. He hears the cutting words of Martha, and he reacts as most human people would. John 11:35 is the shortest verse in the Bible. Jesus wept. Were his tears born of sorrow for the loss of his own friend? Were they tears of compassion over the grief his friends were experiencing. I think it was this and probably a lot more. Twice in this passage we read that Jesus was deeply moved in spirit and he was troubled. These words suggest not sadness, although that's there, but anger. Outrage at what death has done to this family. What death has done to this community. I believe that Jesus was provoked by the havoc death had wreaked when it invades the human experience. And when he leaves, or when death is there, it leaves nothing but fear and pain, grief and loss. I also believe that, Jesus was experiencing was a righteous anger at what death had done. And that was his motivation that convinced Jesus to do something about this thing called death. On this day, at least, death would not have the last word. And like a warrior strapping on his sword, like a champion calling for the next opponent, Jesus says to Martha, "Where have you laid him?" In other words, take me to him. Bring on the challenger, death. It is an exchange of words as Jesus' motivation builds that he makes what his contemporaries and many of us today would think is the most outrageous claim ever made by any human being. Jesus says in verse 25, "I am the resurrection and the life." Those words play real well at funerals. They're great at Easter, but what do they mean? "He who believes in me will live even though he dies, and whoever believes in me will never die." That's a difficult verse, folks. It sounds like doublespeak, doesn't it? If we want to understand these words, we need to first pause and reflect, what exactly is death? How would you define the word death? A child therapist who works with grieving children asked them to share their thoughts about death. Gilda, who was 8 years old, said, "When you die, they put you in a box and they bury you in the ground because you don't look so good." Stephanie, who was 9 years old, said, "When you die, you don't have to do homework in heaven unless your teacher's there." 10-year-old Raymond said, "A good doctor can help you so you won't die. A bad doctor sends you to heaven." Now, we might find such childish opinions amusing, but I'm not sure we can do any better. What is death? Some would say that death is simply a chemical, biological phenomenon. The heart stops beating, neurons stop firing, that's it. If that's so, why does it feel like so much more is going on here? Some say that death is simply the end of existence. But why do we have such an incurable longing for the eternal? Why do we long for something beyond this life? Why do people talk as though those who die still live on somewhere, somehow? I think death is best described as separation. First of all, it's a separation of our bodies from our souls. When we die, our souls leave the physical body. So death is not an end, but rather it's a separation. That is why when we look at our loved one in a casket, we are never satisfied. Because the body's there, but we know the person isn't. Death is also a separation of people from one another. Someone who's been a part of our lives is no longer a part of our lives when they die. And we feel the loss. That is why, no matter how much time has passed, even many years, we can still be overcome by feelings of loss when we think of a loved one who's died. Death is separation. Well, if death is separation, then resurrection must be what? Restoration and reunion. Restoration of body and spirit. Not the old mortal body which turns to dust, but a new glorified body fit for heaven. When Jesus says, I am the resurrection, he who believes in me will live even though he dies, he is announcing to everyone his victory over physical death. Promising that even though believers will die physically, our bodies will be separated from our spirits. In the life to come, we will be restored. We will become whole persons. We won't spend eternity as disembodied spirits floating around the cosmos. Jesus also said, I am the life. Whoever lives and believes in me will never die. With those powerful words, Jesus is announcing to everyone his victory over spiritual death. Just as physical death separates us from a loved one, spiritual death separates us from God. Human beings were meant to be in fellowship with God. To be spiritually dead is to be cut off, separated from God. When Jesus says, I am the life, he's saying that whoever believes in him will no longer be separated from God. Not in this life, not in the life to come. To be human, to live, is to be a whole person, body and spirit, in relationship with others and in fellowship with God. When death comes like a thief, it separates what was meant to be together. Physical death separates us from each other, and spiritual death separates us from God. That's some pretty heavy stuff to absorb in one sitting. So let me explain it a different way. Ever been somewhere special with someone you love dearly? Maybe it's just a park bench or a warm sandy beach, or maybe you're sitting in the family room in front of a roaring fire. In moments such as this, have you ever experienced that sensation that's like this? That it's like a perfect moment? Ever had that? Actually, you know, there's a car company that has an ad out. It has been running for a while. But a man who's shown speeding down what I think is an Australian highway. Have you seen this? And he kind of freezes. And he says, it's a perfect moment. Have you seen that commercial? But you know what? It can't be a perfect moment. You know why? He's alone. I'm talking about those perfect moments when you just feel right with your special friend or your loved one, where you feel right with God and right with the universe. Maybe in such moments you can't help but remember a song of praise that reflects your heart's response to the gift given in your relationship with God and in relationship with your companion. That is life. Body and mind united in the moment. And the whole thing bathed in the goodness and the presence of God. Death robs us of that. It separates body from spirit. It tears us away from the ones we love. If we are not prepared, it can cut us off from God forever. Death is a thief. It's an enemy. It haunts every day of our lives. And when we encounter it, when we hear of a house fire or a high school shooting or the death of a friend, it stops us dead in our tracks. That is why Jesus announced, I am the resurrection and the life. That is why he girded up for battle. He says, take me to him. Verse 39, we pick up the story as Jesus comes to the tomb. Take away the stone, he commands. Martha warns, whoa, wait a minute. But Lord, he's been in there 4 days. Already there would have been a really foul odor. Decomposition, if we like. Perhaps she believed Jesus wanted to see his friend and grieve for him, but I suspect there's more to her caution. I suspect she knew maybe what Jesus was going to try and attempt. Do you hear what she's saying? It's a nice thought, Jesus, but you know what? You can't beat death. No one can beat death. Jesus wasn't listening. Roll away the stone. He calls out in a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. And how it happened, we really don't know. But at the sound of Jesus' voice, the stench of death was replaced with a sweet perfume of life. Skin that was cold and hard became soft and warm. Muscles stiff with rigor mortis flexed with strength. The heart beat once, then twice, and blood flowed through his veins. Lungs filled with air, nerve endings twitched, electrical impulses sent a message to the brain, I'm alive. Jesus is calling my name. You know, that day Jesus confronted the great enemy, and he won. Because Jesus is the resurrection and the life. Death need no longer separate body from spirit, people from one another, people from God. And though we die physically, we can receive back our bodies, we can receive back our loved ones. Though we came into this world spiritually dead, separated by from God by sin, we can be restored with God. We can be restored in this life. We can be restored in the life to come. Do you believe this? That's the question Jesus asked Martha that day in Bethany. That's the question he's asking all of us. Do you believe this? I ask this because Jesus' claim of being the resurrection and the life only applies to those who believe it. Those who accept it as true. Those who commit themselves to following the one who made the claim, namely Jesus Christ. George Herbert, the English poet who lived from 1593 to 1633, expresses the truth well when he writes this. Death used to be an executioner, but the gospel has made him only a gardener. Death may put the seeds, that is you and I, in the ground to perish, but God through Christ causes new life to come from that death. For those who claim to have believed it, I want to remind you that on this day in Bethany, death didn't have the last word. Jesus had the last word. And this is what he said. Take off the grave clothes. Let him go. Turn him loose. Set him free. Let him live. That's what Jesus is saying to all of us. Take off those robes of death that you're wearing. Squash that existential anxiety that is residing within you. Embrace the life that Christ is offering you.